Now, this next story is about a couple of whys. The first why, the great big why, is why are people good?
Group selection, intense group selection, competition of group against group, allowed the more cooperative groups, the groups with more altruists, to defeat those composed of selfish individuals. And it helped develop the best angels of our nature. That is, our ability for forming alliances and showing mercy all the way to compassion of risking one's life for those not even related in many instances and so on, the best qualities. But yes, that's the basic idea.
We're hardwired for morality.
We are, ma'am.
That morality, religion, creativity, all that makes us human is fundamentally biological in nature. Well, that is an idea from Edward O. Wilson, professor emeritus at Harvard, a giant in science, the father of sociobiology, the fellow who revealed the magnificence of ant society, the man many consider to be Darwin's heir. Back in 2012, at an effervescent 82, E.O. Wilson wrote the book The Social Conquest of Earth, in which he says that it is science that holds the key to the human condition. And that key? A phenomenon called eusocial behavior.
Eusocial meaning that you have a group of individuals remaining together over more than one generation, rearing young, and, above all, dividing labor that includes some degree of altruism, I mean in the individual sense, of having more reproductive individuals coexisting with less reproductive individuals, I should say less genetically fit. I'd spent a good part of my life studying the social insects, the social organization of animals generally, and it has been achieved about 2 dozen times.
Amongst all species.
Among all species of animals, a very rare condition.
Remarkable. Of all the thousands of species ever to roam the Earth, we are just one of 2 dozen to form highly cooperative societies. Societies in which the engine of evolution is not fueled by the drive to see your direct genetic offspring survive. No, that's called kin selection. E.O. Wilson says we eusocial human beings are compelled by something bigger, by group selection, no matter how many or how few members of that group share your DNA.
We are group crazy. I mean, that's what we must do all the time, is communicate and form bonds and the like. There are reasons why we are so good at it. Cognitive psychologists like Michael Tomasello have studied it intensely and suggested how this could have played a role in the very origin of Homo sapiens, that we became socially intelligent when we were together in this tight bonding situation of a nest, a campfire site. And so to read one another's intentions, to get cooperation, to compete, is something that works at the individual selection level. And it explains an awful lot of human behavior.
This is astonishing. And if you're a scientist, you're now thinking, wait, what? Why? This makes no sense. A half century of biological research points to the supremacy of selfish king gene. Kin selection theory works because we know parents will instinctively lay down their lives for their children. How could the good of the group ever overwhelm that?
To make a long story short, it turns out that these lions got to the eusocial level through a sequence of adaptations that occur out of many, many adaptations that would occur by solitary animals running around by themselves, for the most part. And out of those many adaptations, there is one that takes these species, or took these species, to the threshold of eusociality. And that is the creation by a female, or a male and a female, of nests that are difficult to make and expensive and worth defending, from which the one or both of the parents forage to get food and bring it back and raise the young in the nest progressively. And when that happens, the species in that nest, was forming that nest, is one short step from eusociality, which is, if you granted that that's what happened in the human line, and it certainly looks like it.
That makes me wonder if whether or not, you know, in millions and billions of years from now, we may see many more eusocial species, if it's the next wave of evolution.
If we wish it, because we're now in control of almost everything, you know. So now we come, circle back, if we may, to human instincts. Mm-hmm. And then think now for a moment, of what are the two of the most powerful instincts that create the human condition and some of our highest achievements and some of our most dangerous traits.
Do you mind if I just jump in here? Because what you're saying is that there's an evolutionary way of looking at the origins of human morality, that there's an evolutionary impulse to benefit the group because that will advance our species. That's why we have an urge to be
advance
good.
Advance our groups. We tend to be just a little bit group-centered in dispensing our altruism. It takes something of an effort to distribute it, particularly to other groups that we feel are competing with one another. But yes, that's the basic idea. We're also hardwired for religion, organized religion, which isn't so good, because organized religion really just spun right out of this group versus group competition.
Can I ask you a little bit more about that? Because as I was reading your book, I wondered, the complication in humanity is that we have a tendency to form groups around just about anything. I mean, just the other day, I might be getting myself into a bit of hot water here, but just the other day I declared in our office that I'm not the biggest fan of baseball, and to say mm-hmm. that here in Red Sox Nation is to invite dagger stares from your colleagues. But I wonder, how is it that forming a group around sports actually advances humanity?
It doesn't.
And yet we do it.
Well, we are compelled almost to do it. Social psychologists have made a major contribution here by showing experimentally how easily people form groups. They want to form groups. They affiliate with someone or a group, and pretty soon that group looks to them as the best, and they are among the best. For example, I'm going to walk out of here full of pride in being with WBUR as opposed to one of those other alien stations out there somewhere. Just kidding, but not kidding by much. Social psychologists working with groups of people have shown that even when the volunteers know what they're doing, when they're set up to play games with one another, they're chosen randomly, this was an experiment and so on, it's almost they can't help it. Pretty soon the little group that they form a part of begins to be suspicious of the other group playing the game.
And that's the same instinct that you were talking about earlier that gives rise to this dark side of group selection, conflict.
Group selection gives us some of the best qualities that we admire in ourselves as a species, but it's also the most dangerous. Let's call ethnocentrism and group, a sense of group as superiority, the bad side of it. Let's call this a flaw, a pathology we've inherited. To diagnose it correctly and through self-understanding and know what we're doing, that we're not just obeying God or some great ideology that's going, you know, would lead us to paradise. To diagnose it is the first step to a cure. Let's find out who we are. Let's get better self-understanding. If I'm wrong, then let's prove it and move on and get a better solution. But right now, we have to grant that our behavior does fit a model of competing individual and group selection that can be tempered by self-understanding and the careful avoidance of those situations that, without justification except an emotional built-in response, lead us to the brink of violent conflict.
And yet, you have really rattled the scientific community. The paper that you were talking about a little earlier, the paper you published in Nature in 2011, which provided mathematical evidence for the idea of the superiority of group selection over kin selection. That really got a vehement response from the scientific community. I mean, Nature published responses from hundreds of your colleagues out there saying...
122, or is it 124, signed their names to a protest.
Saying that E.O. Wilson yeah. has it all wrong.
Well, that kind of response may be a suggestion that we were right. I remember what Einstein said when, after he'd produced the theory of relativity, 100 physicists came out with a paper condemning the theory of relativity, and the title of it was 100 Physicists Against Einstein. Well, that didn't go anywhere, particularly after Einstein commented, if the theory is wrong, why isn't it enough just for one to say it? In other words, he was aware, as I think everybody should be, that science is not settled by polls, and it is not settled by emotional response.
Professor Wilson, if I could ask you, as I read your book, I found it to actually be... I hope this doesn't sound too naive, but I found it to be an incredibly hopeful idea. Because... you're bringing together science and philosophy here that says we don't necessarily have to be compelled to act only in the benefit of those who would inherit our own genes. That's a great hope. But on the other hand, as we were talking a little earlier, that same tribalism is what's given rise to some of our most destructive behaviors. Yeah. So in thinking about how... today we want humanity to move forward, what is the room in this theory of yours to give us guidance? Can we deprogram ourselves from conflict and war?
I don't think we can deprogram ourselves from our impulses. But I think, just as you suggest, that self-understanding is going to take a lot of tension off of our dealings with other groups. And I don't think, however, one thing I think it demonstrates is that the tug of war between individual level selection and group selection, that we don't want to go from one extreme to another. If we went all the way toward group selection, we'd be like ants. If we went all the way to individual level selection, we'd dissolve, we'd be savages. So somewhere in between, we're going to have to find the compromise, not only among ourselves as individual and groups, but also compromises between groups, and seek them more avidly, realizing that the solution for human problems and a really nice, good future is going to be how to handle that. Of course, that's what political scientists and social scientists and economists are all trying to do. But maybe by understanding what they're dealing with, all these variables they try to deal with and they really can't handle very well, might be explainable after all.
Professor Wilson, it has been a true pleasure and honor speaking with you. Thank you so much.
I thought it was a good conversation. Thank you.
You just heard about a third of my 2012 conversation with E.O. Wilson when his book, The Social Conquest of Earth, came out. We talked about so much more, about our human ancestors, Australopithecus, Homo habilis, and about Charles Darwin himself and how he was obsessed with ants. It is absolutely wonderful stuff. And if you want, you can hear the full interview at radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.